The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every episode, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe or rate it on your podcast app of choice, support the podcast financially through Red Circle, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, covering all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestler with Chris Sings, and Imp's WWE Adventure. You can become part of the Social Suplex community by joining our Discord, where you can chat directly to the hosts of the shows or other listeners about wrestling, sport, pop culture, and much more. My guest for today is the founder of Social Suplex and one of the hosts of Keeping It Strong Style, Jeremy Donovan. And we're discussing Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson from Dynamite Grand Slam in 2021. How are you going today, Jeremy?
Doing good, Sam. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad the AEW Match Guide is back in action, and I'm glad to be on this episode here with you this morning.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It is good to be back. I've got to say, I'm a bit rusty on that old intro. I'll take a little bit of getting used to it before it rolls off the tongue again. And I've had to add a few things in since I used to do it. We've got a Discord now. It's great. We've got so many things going on here in Social Suplex land. So, it is good to be back.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you back. And yeah, man. So Suplex, we're popping. A lot of big things happening.
Indeed. Let's get straight into it, Jeremy. I don't think we should dilly-dally. We should take inspiration from what Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson did. And let's just get straight into things. My question to you, Jeremy, I laid out a whole list of matches which you helped contribute to. You put votes on for what was the greatest AEW match that they've completed so far when we did that list a few months ago. When I let you pick for this podcast, why did you choose this particular match?
Yeah, so I picked this match because this, I think, is a very important match in AEW history. And also, you know, as time goes on, we see great matches, you know, every month, every pay-per-view, every Dynamite. And I think we kind of forget, you know, some of the bigger matches and moments. And obviously, through the, you know, five-year history of this company, there's been a ton of five-star matches. But I think with this match was like the one of the really first like big dream matches that AEW put on. You know, that phrase dream match gets thrown out a lot, and you know, it's got to the point now even like in small independents will say, yeah, you know, dream match, you know, this guy from, you know, 5 minutes away versus this guy 10 minutes away, you know, it's a big dream match. And so I feel like that phrase, like dream matches, it's overused, it's hit over the head, everybody's using it. But like this match felt like, all right, this is a real dream match. Here's, you know, Bryan Danielson, you know, Bryan Daniel or Daniel Bryan, however you know him. You know, here's this guy coming from WWE, coming, you know, the big yes moment from WrestleMania 30, this big star that you've watched from the Ring of Honor days, make it in the WWE, have this, you know, become a big star. Versus Kenny Omega, the, you know, the homegrown star of AEW, one of the guys who started the company, a guy that, you know, grinded his teeth also in the indies, going to Japan and becoming a big star without having to go to the WWE. And yeah, they had one match before in the indies, but this is like both guys almost like their final stage. You know, they hit their final evolution. And now they're going to face off in this big arena on this, you know, this big stage on this big special Dynamite. Like everything about this match just felt special. It felt like a true moment in a true dream match. And it just, I think it'll go down as one of those most exciting matches in AEW history, an important matchup, and just everything from the build to the crowd reaction, just everything about this match is just, I think, a true definition of what AEW was supposed to be all about.
I absolutely agree with you there. It's funny, you know, we've had three Forbidden Doors now. We've had like a whole slate of these like dream matches. And it's easy to forget, you know, how much expectation there was around this sort of match and how much anticipation there was with just these two meeting. You know, there wasn't a whole lot in story. And we're going to talk a little bit about the build and the going in. But, back in like 2019, 2020, you know, here on Social Suplex, we used to have like a draft. And this is the kind of match. We haven't done it for a number of years now. And like, it's almost like the wrestling drafts and the times where you'd construct dream match cards, it's not as alluring as it used to be. And I think part of that is because we've had so many of those matches. You know, we've had our Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada. We've had our John Moxley versus Kenny Omega. And we've had our Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson. But for so long, we, you know, us nerds, us like total wrestling geeks, we dreamed about like what would happen if these two ever crossed paths, and we, you know, fantasy booked it and we thought about it and we're like, oh, could you do it this way? Could you do it that way? And, you know, it actually happened, against the probability. Both of these two guys had to go through a lot to actually make it to this match. And it's, you know, it's almost improbable that it was ever going to happen, but it did. And yeah, having at the point we're at in 2024, it's easy to forget how big this felt and the grandeur of the moment that just was these two finally facing off in a ring together.
Yeah, it's such a huge moment. And I think, you know, there was some question on whether or not Bryan Danielson was going to even come to AEW because, you know, he had the opportunity, I think, a few years before to leave WWE, and he always talked about going on this like wrestling, you know, dream tour and going to Japan and doing a G1 and all this stuff. And then he ended up like re-signing with WWE, and it just seemed like, all right, Bryan is just, he's a WWE guy now. Like, he's never going to come to AEW. He's never going to do anything in New Japan. He's just going to, you know, he's just going to do the WWE thing. And that was fine. But I think like, all right, you know, once his music hit at All Out and he comes out after Adam Cole, it's like, okay, here we go. Like, yes, he's this guy. He still loves wrestling. He still wants to do this cool stuff. And yeah, a lot of times we've seen other companies and bookers, even sometimes in AEW, they'll hold off on kind of the match you want to see when a guy comes in. And they didn't do that here. It's like, from the get-go, Danielson's confronting Kenny Omega. That's the match everybody wants to see. Let's not, you know, dilly-dally and wait time. Let's give the people what they want and give them it on a big stage on Dynamite Grand Slam.
Mm. You've kind of led into what my first kind of question that I was hoping to ask you, Jeremy, is like, what is your history with Bryan Danielson? Because I know, like, obviously, Kenny Omega was you're most known on Social Suplex here for Keeping It Strong Style. You've hugely successful New Japan podcast, and you guys started that in 2017. So it's pretty fair to say you've got a very sordid history with talking about and podcasting about Kenny Omega. Like, he was a huge part of the reason you started that. But Bryan Danielson, when did you first start watching Bryan Danielson? Because you followed ROH in the noughties, didn't you?
Yeah, so I first saw Bryan Danielson, Ring of Honor, mid-2000s, like during that time period. Also, you know, WCW is gone, WWE is the main thing in town, and, you know, if you want to watch wrestling easily, like, that was the main thing. But, you know, during that time period, you know, also you got the heavy John Cena push, Randy Orton, and it's just like, this is just not, you know, there's just something missing here. And then, you know, you try to look around, see, you know, the internet's booming. You're finding, you know, what people are talking about, what are the people watching. And then somehow I stumble upon, Ring of Honor and start seeing guys like Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness, Samoa Joe and all these guys. And then, yeah, I've on and off watched Bryan there and just thought he was great. And of course, you know, I'm a big Shawn Michaels guy. And I found out, you know, he was trained by part of his training was done by Shawn Michaels. So I was like, oh, okay, all right, he must be good then. And so, yeah, just, you know, watched him through a lot of that Ring of Honor run, some of the big matches he had there. And then, you know, he got the big news, you know, towards the end of, I think it was like 2009, you know, him going to WWE, Nigel going to TNA. That was like a pretty big moment because they were like the two homegrown stars of Ring of Honor that really got built up and were like the big main eventers. And they were finally kind of, you know, making it on TV. And then, of course, Brian had to go through FCW here in Tampa, Florida. And then he switched over to, you know, they did the whole NXT game show, reality show thing on Sci-Fi and him being paired up with Jericho. And I remember the internet just being really ablaze because here's, you know, even at that time, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world being a rookie, quote unquote, for The Miz. And it's just like, oh, man, like this company, they just got hand wrapped, you know, one of the best wrestlers. And this is what they're doing with him. And then, of course, you know, he had to.
It was the perfect pairing for him. It was absolutely the perfect pairing. Immediate conflict because of that exact reason.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it was a nice little rival, career rival for him. But still at that time, like, all right, you know, watching him have to, like, deal with The Miz. And then he does the whole thing with, like, the Bella twins and...
Yeah, all that stuff afterwards, I agree with you there. It's not the greatest.
And then also, you know, the whole, like, they're calling him a goat and he's doing the no thing. And then the flip just switch with the whole the yes stuff and the whole, you know, the rivalry with Cena and, you know, keep getting screwed out of the title and eventually, you know, just being forced into that WrestleMania 30 main event. You know, there's a lot of people who like to retcon that and try to spin it and be like, oh, that was always the plan. We were always going to do, you know, Danielson chasing the title. And it's like, that was very clearly not the plan. And if you, you know, read the reports of some of the, you know, in-depth reporters out there and kind of knew what was going on at the time, like it was clearly supposed to be Batista and Orton for the title of that main event. And even before, I mean, you know, the whole CM Punk leaving, you know, that Royal Rumble and that, how that elevated Bryan to the spot as well, because Punk didn't want to face Triple H. There's so much that went around there that ended up getting Bryan catapulted into that main event scene. And yeah, you know, WrestleMania 30 is just such a great moment, and I always remember that, watching it over with Rich Latta from One Nation Radio over at his apartment at the time here in Florida, and just how excited we were seeing Bryan beat Triple H. And then he goes into the triple threat and beats Orton and Batista and finally becomes a champion. It's just like, all right, like they finally did it. Like they got it right. Like our guy, one of the best wrestlers in the world, a guy who kind of represents the independence and pro wrestling, is here on the one of the biggest stages in wrestling with both world championships. It was a really cool moment.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a big part of me getting back into wrestling. So 2014 was when I got back into wrestling after sort of being disenchanted for a few years there. And the reason I came back was because I heard that Bryan Danielson was kind of on the road to being in the main event for WrestleMania, and CM Punk had left and like crazy stuff was going down in the WWE. And I totally agree with you there. Like it was a phenomenal moment, that WrestleMania 30. And like towards the end of Bryan's WWE career, I kind of agree with what you said a bit earlier. It did become a bit frustrating to be like, oh, this guy, he's almost trapped. You know, he gets a 15-minute outing with Drew Gulak in, you know, Elimination Chamber, where they kind of let him stretch his legs a bit, but you just know he could be doing so much more, and you wish he could be doing so much more. And it's at a time where, you know, New Japan is just absolutely cresting and becoming, you know, one of the most incredible promotions we've ever seen. And, you know, AEW's building up, and the indies are through ROH, kind of the resurgence off the back of the Elite. There's just so much going on in wrestling, and you see Danielson's like locked in this WWE contract with seemingly no out, and them with no real desire to let him stretch his legs beyond, you know, the odd canter every now and again. And you know, fast forward then to All Out, you know, that All Out 2021, that main event between Kenny Omega and Christian, you know, you almost forget that that was even a, you know, that's a match, because all you remember is afterwards Omega gets on the mic and the Elite's all around him, and he says, you know, everyone who could beat him up is either gone or dead. And then Adam Cole comes out, and then you kind of like had an inkling that Bryan Danielson may be there, but Adam Cole shows up and everyone's excited about that, and they start beating down Jurassic Express, and then Bryan Danielson comes out and the crowd's just delirious. It's just like an all-time moment for AEW. Like, I know you said you kind of had those similar feelings with Danielson's WWE run to what I did. How did you feel in the moment when he appears at All Out in 2021?
Oh man, I was super pumped. You know, like I said, Brian throughout his career, one of my favorite wrestlers. And yeah, you start seeing the interviews before and him talking about, you know, going to WrestleMania with Edge and Roman and how he felt nothing. Like, here he is once again in a big, you know, title main event, the biggest wrestling show of the year, and he feels nothing. And you're seeing those comments, and you're like, all right, like, is he gonna leave? Is this actually gonna happen? And yeah, he shows up at All Out and right after Adam Cole. And, you know, because normally you would think they wouldn't do a double debut like that. So Adam Cole comes out, and you're like, okay, cool. Adam Cole's here. But then, yeah, Danielson comes out right after, and you know, we're like, all right, this is awesome. Let's go. Huge moment, just the crowd erupting. I think the whole, you know, wrestling fans across the world erupted, and we get, you know, the Bryan and Kenny Omega face off. And it's like, all right, yes, this is great.
Yeah, my personal theory is that this is the high water mark for AEW. They had so much momentum coming out of the pandemic. You know, you had like the Hangman Page story just absolutely fizzing and popping, and that was drawing great business. Everyone was so excited to be going back and watching this company live that, you know, we'd watched in pandemic times for longer than we ever got to see live in 2019, early 2020. It had so much momentum. And then you have like different folks from WWE jumping as well. So you've got, you know, Andrade, Malakai coming in, and there's just this, and then CM Punk, like the big white whale that like no one ever thought would come back. He finally returns, and he's returning to AEW, and, you know, he's saying all the right things. And then at this pay-per-view, which is an absolutely incredible pay-per-view, it ends with Adam Cole and then Bryan Danielson showing up. There was so much momentum and so much goodwill. And look, honestly, like in hindsight, it sounds naive, but I don't know. I felt like at the time that the wrestling world was reorienting itself around AEW, and it's so naive to look back on how I felt at that period, because the good times were always going to end, and WWE is just like this corporate monolith that was always going to come back at some point. And momentum can never last forever, but there was just so much of it at the moment. AEW was surging so hard. It felt like, you know, we're on the cusp of it literally like changing the wrestling world. Not to say it hasn't in its own way, but like, I don't know, at the time I just felt like it was going to take over everything, because there was just so much happening that was, you know, fulfilling the dreams and fantasies and things that we'd hoped for so long in pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, AEW, they were selling tickets like crazy, filling up these buildings. You know, you look at the TV ratings around that time. They were getting really close to Raw and the demo, yep, and SmackDown. It's like you mentioned, like it kind of felt like, all right, like finally we have a viable number two that can actually compete somewhat with WWE in like a rating and drawing standpoint. And, you know, we have something that could actually potentially continue to grow and be this huge, big thing and get to WWE's level. And also since then, we've seen kind of like you mentioned, the momentum kind of cut off, you know, the attendance not as great as it was. TV ratings are still good, but not as high. And they're not really competing with Raw and the demo and SmackDown and demo anymore. But yeah, at that moment in time, like all cylinders were hitting, and it just felt like, man, nothing can stop AEW. Their growth is just incredible. And yeah, it was just a really exciting time for a wrestling fan, especially I think if you've grown up and there's only kind of grow up when WWE's gone, WWE is really your only option to have there be a big number two viable option that shows you how pro wrestling can be done and doing it differently than WWE. I think it was just a very exciting thing.
And doing it like seemingly so successfully at the time, and not to say they're not successful today, like they're still wildly successful. What they've achieved is beyond what anyone thought they could do and what anyone else has been able to do this century. But yeah, like at that point, I don't know, this match for me, I think, is the high watermark. It is like the crest of their momentum. And you know, everything, it felt like everything was possible at that moment, and it doesn't anymore. It doesn't feel that way anymore. And there's so many reasons for that. And part of it is just like that was naivety on our parts. But it for people like you and I, and we'll get to the match in a moment, but for people like you and I who've, you know, like, I don't know how you felt. Maybe you were a bit more jaded. But for me, I'm an optimist at heart. And, you know, like I saw how good wrestling could be, you know, outside of WWE when I dipped out in the late 2010s and started watching New Japan, following that regularly and following the Elite, and then saw what AEW could achieve. And I don't know, it felt like we're on a pathway to like a different future to me at that time. And it was an incredible moment. Like in that moment was one of the reasons I started this podcast way back in 2021, was because I was just so in love with what AEW was doing. And yeah, it's nice to remember that moment, even though it was, you know, possibly, you know, getting a bit carried away with things a little bit, maybe.
it's just a really exciting time to be a fan. Yep. Obviously, it still is, but yeah, just yep. during that time, and like I said, everything is just going well for AEW, and yeah, we get to this matchup here, this big dream match. You know, they're doing the Grand Slam show, Arthur Ashe Stadium. Nobody's done yep. a wrestling show in this big tennis stadium, and you're in WWE's backyard in New York, and you're drawing, I think it was like, what, 20,000 fans to that show. And it's just this big, big moment. And I think that this match was like a big statement, I think, of like, all right, we're in WWE's territory, drawing 20,000, two top stars, one guy, a guy that came from the indies that WWE really didn't want and was kind of forced to get and kind of forced to push and you know, reluctantly made a star. And then you have another guy who also grinded on the indies, but then went the international path, became a star.
Forged his own path,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Do it on your own path, indies, Japan, and became a huge star in the West based off of what he was doing in Japan, to then now be here and become a star on his own. And just kind of these two unconventional stars on this big stage in an unconventional arena in WWE's backyard. Just everything about it, I felt like, was a big, it was kind of almost like another way of them, you know, Cody smashed the throne at the first Double or Nothing to kind of take the shot at Triple H. Like, in a way, like this whole thing with just it being Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson, Arthur Ashe Stadium in WWE's backyard was almost kind of like a proverbial throne smashing moment for AEW here.
Yep. Well, let's get to the match. I couldn't put it better myself there, Jeremy. Let's get into the match. As we always do here on the AEW Match Guide, we'll give the match its flowers. Dave Meltzer gave this match 5 stars. Cage Match currently has it rated at 9.54. And when we did the match guide earlier this year, this is the match that came in third behind only 2 other matches. So it is a match that is held in extremely, extremely high regard by critics and fans and, you know, media personalities alike. As you mentioned earlier, Jeremy, they did not muck around. When Brian Danielson and Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson showed up, he immediately confronted Kenny Omega. Week one, he shows up, he goes into the ring, he challenges Omega. Omega says, in this company, if you want to face a world champion, you have to earn it. The week after, Danielson says, maybe one day this will be about the title, but today it is just about who is better. Let's give the people what they want. And much to the chagrin of Don Callis, Omega accepts. His pride is wounded and he wants the fight, and he accepts. And that manner of pride, that will play into this match a little bit, particularly the ending, which we'll get to. But that thread of pride is, I think, something to remember about this match. Very quick questions about the build, Jeremy. We kind of already discussed a little bit about it. What did you think of them getting into the match so immediately? And what did you expect the result of this match to be as well? Which is, because that was a hot a hot point of debate at the time of what should happen at the end of this match, what the result should be.
Yeah, I thought the build was good, and I thought it was great that they were going straight to the match. Like I said, sometimes when we get the opportunity to do dream matches, sometimes companies will hold it off or, you know, save it for a quote-unquote, you know, WrestleMania big show kind of feel. But no, they decided to go with it right here. And I think a lot of times, sometimes that's just a better route to go because you don't know, like, are these guys going to get injured? Are, you know, one of these guys going to, you know, punch somebody backstage and get fired? It's like when you have two hot stars and you have the ability to do a dream match. Also, I'm not saying, you know, you just, you know, do it on Rampage or something, but yeah, build to your next big show and get it out the way immediately, because, you know, you have these guys, they're healthy, they're both over, they're both hot right now. It's like, why not go ahead and do it right now, especially when they were able to draw this huge house and do this huge TV rating and gate from it. I'm glad that they decided to, you know, do it now instead of saying, all right, well, maybe let's wait until Double or Nothing that following year and do this whole long journey. Like, I think the way, you know, getting it out there and showing, all right, Bryan Danielson's going to be a top player here, he's going after Kenny Omega, let's run it.
I absolutely agree. Particularly in hindsight, at the time I was kind of a bit worried. I was like, what about Hangman? it turns out I didn't need to worry about Hangman. Hangman was just fine. You know, particularly with hindsight, like, it's important to get the matches done because you don't know when you're not going to be able to run them. As you said, like Cody versus Punk, we never got that. Like, that should have been something that happened in AEW. It's going to happen in WWE. Like, that is an absolute disgrace that's happened. And it's because for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons is that TK at one point was very slow at putting on matches, and he would protect matches quite a bit, but he didn't do it with this one. And I think it's good. And particularly when you look at how the careers for these guys has worked out since this match as well. Like, the only time these guys actually could have faced each other, they did, which is fantastic, because, and we're all blessed because we got to watch this match, and we're fortunate that it happened when it did, because it might not have if they'd waited. What did you expect the result to be, Jeremy? I'm not going to let you off the hook at that one.
I thought maybe at the time that with it being a non-title match, I thought that maybe Bryan was going to win, because then you could do the whole thing. All right, he beat the champion, and then you could do a rematch at some point, and then Kenny could get the win back. It was kind of initially what I was thinking, because at this time, I don't think AEW had done a ton of draws. I think there was like the Pac Moxley, I think that was a draw, I think.
Yeah, that was a time limit draw. Cody Darby in 2019.
Yeah, so they hadn't really done a ton of draws, and, you know, unlike New Japan, AEW is not very consistent with, like, time calls. Like, I think at the very beginning, like, they were trying to make it a thing, and then they just kind of faded out, and so they weren't really doing time calls, and so it just wasn't really, and they weren't really doing a ton of draws, so it just didn't really seem like, all right, they're going to just do a 30-minute time limit draw. I was like, well, yeah, I guess Bryan's probably going to win, because I don't think, you know, beating Bryan probably wasn't the best thing either at the time. So I was like, well, you beat Kenny, it's non-title, Kenny can get the win back in a rematch, you can do a big draw with the rematch and get Kenny the win, and then go on and tell your story with Hangman. But yeah, I was not expecting a draw.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a draw either. I figured there'd be shenanigans, because at the time, you know, the Elite was just going crazy in every match, and a lot of the matches that Kenny had Elite involvement, and I figured that the way they were going to get out was by doing the annoying booking thing, but doing what they could to, you know, you don't want to beat Bryan Danielson his first night in the ring in the company. At the same time, you don't want to beat your world champion, so, you know, you find a reason for this match to get thrown out, and I suspected that's what they would do. Let's get into the match, and we'll talk about the ending when we get to it. But I just wanted to put you on the spot there, because in leading up to this match, that was a big point of debate, I remember, in the community at the time. So, of course, as you mentioned, it was at Arthur Ashe in Queens, New York. 20,166 people in the building at the time. It was a record for the company. It remains, I think, the second biggest attendance that they have done behind All In at Wembley last year. I love this setup. I love tennis courts. I think they're perfect for wrestling. If they can't fit things into Wembley, I think Tony Khan should try and see if he can get into Wimbledon. I don't know, you know, what the posh snobs at Wimbledon would think of that, but that should be his number two option in London. I think tennis courts are the perfect size for a wrestling ring, with, you know, the amount of floor seats you get until you get to the tiered seats. I just think it's a great setup. And of course, both of these guys get big entrances, and the crowd is going absolutely insane for this match. It led off the show. And before there's even a lockup, you're getting the "This is awesome" chants, and that face off. I feel like every few months I just see it go around social media again, like just how insane this felt and how wild the crowd was before these guys even locked up. It was just a huge moment for the company. We kind of already talked about that a little bit, but just this moment here, I think it will be one of those moments that lives in AEW lore, in the way that, you know, the Hogan Rock stare off at the start of their match at WrestleMania 18 lives in WWE lore.
Yeah, honestly, I think one of the best things about this match is the crowd reaction.
Mm.
Like, you just, you know, AEW crowds have historically always been great, but I feel like, especially during this time, like, they were just rabid. And 20,000 people, they were eating everything up. And just from that, it felt like a big match, just from the crowd reaction. And yeah, for the entrances, you know, huge reactions. And then, yeah, there's this epic face-off. And that's just one thing I noted through this whole match, is just how loud the crowd was for the whole match. Even just like simple moves they were doing. I think there was like one point at the beginning where like Kenny just like chopped Brian, and the crowd's like,
ah! Yeah.
It's like everything, like, it's got a huge reaction. The crowd was so invested and so bought in. It's just awesome when you get a crowd like that.
Yeah, early on you get like these two wrestling, you know, a lot of mirror chain wrestling, and a lot of back and forth stuff, and the crowd is just oohing and ahhing with it. And yeah, both of these guys have just got giant chops. And I think like a big thing about the early goings in this match is how similar these two are.
Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting thing to look at, because we know that Kenny Omega, you know, he's gone through New Japan. He's a real hard hitter. You know, he's got big slams in his arsenal. He's got big slams. He's got hard chops. And he's got, you know, his drop kicks as well. One of the interesting things that I saw going around was how people were saying that Danielson was immediately laying things in a lot harder in AEW than he did in WWE. I never really saw his ROH run beyond a few matches here and there that I saw. And so I didn't necessarily immediately notice a difference in terms of how his style had changed. Did you sort of see that early on in this match? And as he progressed, did you feel like he was laying it in a lot harder than what he was in WWE?
Yeah, I felt like this was him kind of, you know, taking the handcuffs off. Obviously, WWE wrestles a softer, quote-unquote, style than, you know, some other promotions, and they have a very formulaic way of how they work and put matches together. You're kind of in a box, and so I feel like, yeah, you know, here the handcuffs are off. He's able to, you know, work the way he wants to work and kind of paint the picture he wants to paint, and yeah, I definitely felt like there was a difference of him, how he's laying the strikes in and cranking some of those submission holes. And it was just that ROH Bryan Danielson, you're going to get your head kicked in kind of guy coming out here. Mm.
Yeah. I liked that he brought back cattle mutilation. That's something I noticed initially, like immediately. It's not something that saw a lot of appearances when he was in WWE, and it hasn't been since he came to AEW as well. I thought he might bring it back, but it's such a unique looking submission. And I really liked seeing that.
It almost kind of felt like with this match and some of his first few matches, he was really trying not to do a ton of like the Daniel Bryan stuff. Like, he wasn't really doing the yes, yes, yes. He wasn't really you know, playing into that. He was doing more of, all right, so yeah, this is ROH Bryan Danielson. Yeah, I'm going to bust out the cat of mutilation. I'm going to do the Regalplex. I'm going to do all, you know, these kicks and hold and stuff that I'm known for outside WWE. So it seemed like he was really trying to play to the wrestling fan, that ROH fan, and be more Bryan Danielson and not Daniel Bryan.
You know, he's probably trying to work out a little bit, work out what works and what doesn't. Like, as I said, cattle mutilation hasn't really come back. So maybe in his own computations of what's working and what's not working, that's one where he's kind of gone, okay, I'll put that to the side. I won't do that. I'll bring back some of the things I learned I kind of leaned on in WWE. And, you know, he is kind of, you know, experimenting a bit. And as you said, he's like immediately gone back to what his style was back in ROH, or much more influenced by that. But you've sort of seen some of the WWE-isms creep in a little bit as well since then. So particularly in these early moments, it's in, you know, even though he's a genius who's got so much experience, he is on a new stage here, and he's kind of working out, and in front of a new audience, he is still working it out, what is actually going to work for him and not. One thing I love that he keeps and he always does is he's got, like, even when he's a face, he's got like a bit of a dirty streak to him. Like, he'll always like grab wrestlers' noses when he's like wrenching their face or kind of like fish hook them a little bit. And I don't know, I just really like that, because if you're in a real wrestling match, you would kind of do that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's one thing he's always done in the, kind of that ROH style, is try to make it more realistic and go for that, those kind of holes, and make it feel more of a fight.
We'll fast forward a little bit and get to sort of the midpoint of the match, the point of the match really where this match got me, and I think it really escalated for everyone. So Danielson's targeting Omega's shoulder throughout the whole thing. Omega's sort of trying to find his way, and he eye gouges Danielson to get back into the match. He really then starts to target Danielson's head, which starts with a hurricanrana, and then he continues with a dive to the outside, a big dive to the outside from Omega. But it really escalates when they go onto the plastic ramp that is on the outside and hits a snapdragon suplex on it. And Danielson, it's a sloped ramp. For those who can't remember, it's a sloped ramp, and Danielson like slides down the ramp like he has just been shot. And then Omega backs up and hits an absolutely huge V trigger where he like launches himself from halfway down the ramp. He hits flush in the side of Danielson's head. The momentum of it sends Omega like flipping over the ropes back into the ring, and Danielson starts convulsing as he flops to the ground. This is the point where the match truly got me. My question to you though, Jeremy, is like, how long had Bryan Danielson been wanting to do this, like, seizure selling and not being able to? And then he busts it out first chance he gets outside of the WWE. How long do you reckon he'd been planning that one for?
Probably for a long time. We've seen with Bryan now that he loves to do, like, the fake seizure, or the fake my legs stuck in the steps, and all these kind of, you know, fake things to really get people drawn in and sucked
pushing
in.
Pushing the limit of selling.
Yeah, and I think especially here, you know, we know the history of his neck and all the injuries that he's had. And so, yeah, that snapdragon all right on the neck, sliding him down the ramp and the refs checking on him. It's like, you know, is this guy really hurt? We know that he, you know, had such a hard time coming back. And we know the history of his, you know, the neck and not feeling stuff in his arm. And so, yeah, he can really play on people's, you know, emotions and heartstrings because of all the real stuff that's happened to him. And so, yeah, when he's, you know, convulsing and faking a seizure here, yeah, and he's had a history of seizures, it's just like, man, just peak carnyism, just peak, just getting people, sucking people in with that history.
But don't lie, like, in the moment, did it get you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little worried, because it's like, yeah, we know what happened after WrestleMania 30 and how hard it took for him to come back, and the kind of the start and stop stuff of him after WrestleMania 30 due to the neck injuries, and then he had to retire and he had the seizures, and then he was able to come back from retirement but was still just a part-time, and you can tell he wasn't taking as crazy bumps. And so yeah, when he's taking these crazy bumps here in AEW and acting like he's, you know, getting a seizure, acting like he's hurt, it's like, oh, you know, is this guy, what's going on here? Like, is this not good? But of course, it's just Bryan Danielson being master worker, master seller, and getting people.
Yeah, finding new ways to sell the pain and to sell the audience and get them emotionally involved. Because Omega, he then goes in, like, he kind of really puts a mean streak on, and he, like, slams Danielson through the table on the outside, and Danielson just looks so groggy, and Omega grabs some water and just kind of drinks it, pours it on himself. He looks in complete control, and, you know, then he just hits another giant V-trigger. It's a really... Omega's high impact offense, like, at this point, is really effective in playing into what Danielson wants to, like, how Danielson wants to sell.
Yeah. And then also, you know, yeah, those V triggers. I know at one point he gets like 4 or 5, you know, V triggers. Mm. And I think the V trigger is like one of Kenny's like best moves. And it's just, it sounds off. It looks brutal. And so, yeah, he's following up now on this neck injury by just throwing these vicious V triggers over and over again to the head of Bryan Danielson. And again, I'm sure people will probably, you know, a lot of safety police were concerned about Brian and taking all these headshots. But of course, Kenny being one of the best in the world, also doing it very safely, but still making it look devastating. Yeah, those V triggers are just nasty.
Mm, and he also hits an avalanche snapdragon as well, just for good measure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is, I'd say, my one critique of this match. You mentioned the time calls earlier. They did do some time calls in this match. And, like, on rewatch, it really sticks out that this is a match where they're doing time calls. And, of course, it's the one match that they've got that ends in a draw the first time in forever. And it's also the first time in forever that they're doing time calls. Do you think it's a fair critique that does sort of telegraph what's going on?
Yeah, definitely. Because if you're not doing it and all of a sudden, like, you start doing it, because, like, that's definitely a sign of, like, all right, well, something's probably happening here. They're probably either they're gonna tease it, like, they're gonna get up right to, like, the very end and somebody's gonna win, or they're gonna do the time limit draw. And, you know, I think time calls work. We see it in New Japan. It works all time, and it happens, and you don't even think about it. And so had AEW kind of stuck with that, I think it wouldn't have been a big deal here, just doing the 5-minute calls, five minutes pass, just keep doing that 10 minutes and just keep doing it through every match. And then people would get used to it. And I know not everybody's a New Japan fan, but they would get used to it and be like, all right, cool. This is what AEW does. They do these time calls, and, you know, that's just part of the deal. And then had they kept doing that up to this match and they did it consistently, I don't think it would have been a problem here. But then once, yeah, you know, you have Justin Roberts kind of start doing the time calls here, it's like, oh, okay, are they bringing time calls back, or are they doing it just for this match because they're going to do a draw?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that, come on, Justin Roberts, get to work. It's not that hard. Sit there with the time.
I think part of it, like, American fans are just not used to, like, something like that happening in the match. Like, when you hear an announcement, you're kind of like, wait, what's happening? Like,
yeah,
we're trying to watch this match. And so I think maybe that's why they've gone away from doing it. But you know, again, in New Japan, it happens all the time. It's very kind of just under the radar. You hear it, you move on. It doesn't affect your viewing of the match. And for some matches, it helps, because then as times, you know, it's running down, you're getting to that 30-minute time limit. It's like, oh, you know, we're getting close to a draw. And I think it adds excitement to it once you do it all the time. But then, yeah, once you only pull it out for a match that you know you're doing a draw for, yeah, then it kind of hurts the match a little bit.
Let's talk about the final stretch, though. Both men try and hit their finishes in this final stretch. Omega gets Danielson, like, right up for the one-winged angel, but Danielson counters it. Omega dodges a Busaku knee. Omega goes up for a Phoenix Splash, and of course he eats it when he goes for it. He misses. Danielson gets in some yes kicks and then goes to stomp Omega's fucking head in before he nearly gets him in the lapel lock. And then Omega gets the rope break. It's like very back and forth. And we do have that timer counting down. They're counting down 5 minutes, 1 minute, 30 seconds. And Omega's caught in the lapel lock at one point. So it's like, oh, can he survive? As time's called, these two are just like trading strikes, and they continue to just brawl, and people have to come in and separate them. you know, it's a real back and forth, lots of counters, them going for big moves, hitting, lots of drama. You've seen, you know, you've been watching New Japan, podcasting about New Japan, so you've seen lots of these like epic final stanzas. Where does this one rank for you, Jeremy?
I think it's definitely up there, and I like the way they did it with them both just kind of fighting as the time ran out.
Absolutely.
A lot of times in time limit draws, you will have one person who's kind of in control, and it's like, oh, if the time would have went out, like that person would have won. Like they could have done it where Brian puts Kenny in the yes lock, time goes out, and he doesn't tap. It's like, oh, you know, if he had a few more seconds, maybe Kenny would have tapped. Or, you know, Kenny could have hit him with the one-wing angel, and then it could have been like, no, one, two, and the time runs out. It's like, oh, well, Kenny would have won if he had, you know, literally one more second. But they chose not to pick a definitive winner in that way and just have them both continue to brawl. So it's like, all right, clearly these guys need more time because there was no real definitive winner here. We need to do a rematch. It needs to be, you know, either like an Iron Man or no time limit or 60-minute time limit. It was a cool moment just to kind of have it both guys being even playing field and kind of them continuing to fight as the time went ran out.
Yeah, I love how I like that ending as well. And I like how it almost felt like these two just didn't care anymore, that the time was up. And it kind of goes back to that build where, you know, Danielson has to appeal to Kenny Omega's pride of being like, I heard you were the best bout machine. I've been hearing for years about this legendary Kenny Omega, and now I come to face him and he's trying to avoid me. And it's like Danielson woke that up, and both of these two are just so lost in the moment and enjoying the battle. That when the bell rings, they don't even care. They just want to keep going for fighting's sake because that's what they're doing. And I love that the nature of it. You know, pegs them as equals, but also just pegs them as just being there for the love of the game. And the crowd is there for that as well. It's almost like a symbiotic relationship with the crowd in that manner. It's like these guys are as caught up in the moment as the crowd is as the crowd is. And they have to be pulled apart. I think it's a beautiful ending.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm. So, of course, it did end in a draw. And I think, in hindsight, it's probably the best way it could have. Like, neither of us pegged it for a draw, but I honestly don't think they could have done it any better. What did you think of them doing it as a draw, like, in sort of a utilitarian perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you look back, I think that's probably the best thing to do. Because I think at that time, too, we were thinking, oh, there's definitely going to be rematch, which there hasn't been yet. So yeah, I think in the long run that was probably the best thing to do.
Yeah, it's funny, it almost is like it's kind of fitting that these two's rivalry, you know, you've got that kind of very funny match from PWG back in 2009, and it's just very funny that, you know, two of the all-time greats have this, you know, little match which is 15 minutes of them mostly just mucking around, like mostly just stuffing around, like doing it, play like singing John Jankel, Gene Liner, Smith, doing the spot that never ends, and then having like a, you know, a balls to the wall 5 minutes to finish things off. And then, you know, like if these guys never fight again, this would be those two. It would almost be like two very fitting and nice notes for their legacy to finish on. I'd love to see them again, but it's almost like this matchup is a bit snake bit. You know, you've got Kenny had to leave after Full Gear in 2021. So you think, you know, maybe in 2022, they would have revisited it if Kenny had been, you know, if Kenny had been healthy then. But then of course, Kenny comes back in 2022. They get suspended. and then by the time the Elite are back and out of the trios division, they're feuding with BCC, then it's time for Danielson to break his arm prior to Blood and Guts, when these two would have actually faced off again. And then when Danielson gets back in 2023, by that time, the factions have stopped feuding, and Kenny Omega very soon after gets diverticulitis, and it has been off until this day that we're recording. So yeah, it's almost like it's fated to never happen again, which is sad, but I don't know, there is something beautiful about it as well.
Yeah, and what we'll see is, I know obviously Brian is at this time winding down and is not gonna, you know, he's going to Wembley, as that's gonna be supposedly his last big match, the full-time competitor, and he's going to switch to part-time after that. So who knows? I mean, there's still a possibility the match could happen in the future, but I don't know if it will be as special or as big as this first one here. But yeah, it's again, it was kind of one of these gems that we should always kind of look back on as far as like a genuine dream match and what AEW is all about.
Yeah, I think I'll put it in the same basket as like Omega Okada 5. Like, it would be beautiful to get it, but at the same time, the series is perfect as it is anyway. Like, we don't need to have it, but it would be great to get.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm curious on your opinion of, Jeremy, is this match was a 30-minute time limit draw. They did kind of hold back on the ending. Like, they could have done more in the ending stretch. They could have given us a result. And yet this match is rated so highly. Like I went before, it was rated third. It's rated higher than like many other very well regarded and like very epic singles matches. The most obvious comparison that I can make is it's rated higher than Hangman versus Danielson from Winter is Coming, which was an hour long draw. And you know, like, I'm just curious on your thoughts on, you know, even though this match doesn't have an ending, it's still ranked higher than so many more of these, you know, epic singles matches that we got. You know, it's rated higher than Ospreay Danielson. It's rated higher than Omega Ospreay. It's rated higher in this than, sorry, it's not rated higher than Omega Ospreay. That's a lie. in that match guide, but it's rated higher than, say, Punk MJF or, as I said, Omega Hangman or Hangman and Danielson. Like, this is a, even though it sort of even lacks an ending sequence, it sort of like it hangs back a little bit on the ending sequence. Why do you think this match is like just so well regarded?
Well, I think it just goes to show, just it shows how special this match was, and I think how much people really wanted to see that 2021 Kenny Omega versus 2021 Bryan Danielson, and which what level stars they are, and just how badly people wanted this match. That a time limit draw didn't stop people from going, you know, 5 or 4.75 on it. And I mean, all those other matches you mentioned were great too, but I feel like, again, this was that genuine dream match that you wanted to see. And of course, I'm sure people would have loved a finish, but I think people were just happy we got the match. And the fact that the way, because sometimes a time limit draw can bring a match down if it's not done well, but I felt like we talked about here, like, it was done well and they were kind of kept fighting, and you didn't get that moment of like, all right, you kind of felt like you were cheated out of somebody winning with like them doing a move right as the time runs out. It was all right, he's got a still equal, you know, footing, and I think it helped elevate Kenny Omega to go toe for toe for, you know, one of the quote unquote, you know, top WWE guys. You know, as a casual quote-unquote wrestling fan might know who Bryan Danielson is and know him as a top star. And to watch this match for the first time, you see Kenny Omega on the same level as him and ending in a draw on the same level. I think that helped elevate Kenny to maybe some WWE fans who were jumping ship during this time.
And, you know, later on we go on to find out that he's wrestling with, like, upteen debilitating conditions, including vertigo, which is making, like, the world spin as he wrestles sometimes. So yeah, incredible that he managed to pull it off this way. And yeah, I think it's as much a vibes pick as anything else. I think, like, we talked so much early on about, like, how high the vibes were for AEW at the time, how incredible the surge in momentum it felt. And for, you know, someone who'd followed these guys' career for so long, and how exciting it was that they were finally facing each other. And, you know, the crowd was so bought into this match and carried it to another level as well. I think that's why, even though, like, I don't know, for me personally, I feel like Hangman versus Danielson is probably like a better match, like, from a, you know, if you were to just look at it from a cold light of day lens. But when you factor in all of those other ineffable sort of factors, I understand why this one's so high, and I get why it's so high. We've sort of covered everything up and down. Jeremy, is there anything else you'd like to add about this match before we wrap things up here today?
No, I think we kind of hit on all the points there. really great match. If you're a newer AEW fan and you're hearing this and you have not watched this match, I would definitely recommend finding the match online and watching it, because again, it just shows you kind of the heights that AEW was at, and this being a genuine dream match, the crowd reaction, the build, like everything about this was just a really special and awesome match and moment. There's a reason why it was ranked so high on your match guide, and why people were throwing several stars at it. So definitely, if you haven't watched this match or you haven't watched it in a while, I would definitely recommend going back and watching it.
Yeah, it does not feel like half an hour watching this match. Like, you get lost in it so quickly. The crowd and everything that's going on, you get lost in it so quickly. Particularly, as I said, like, once Omega starts dealing out V-triggers to the side of Danielson's head, it's a joy to watch him try and work us like that. Jeremy, I really appreciate you coming on today. I appreciate being back in this podcast seat and doing this all again. Before we go, can you let the people know where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter/X at Jeremy L. Donovan. I co-host Keeping a Strong Style here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Our show's audio version drops every Tuesday morning. You can also check out our Patreon that we've launched recently, patreon.com/KIStrongStyle. That's how you can get access to our live stream, the video version of the show, ad-free audio. I'm also doing a lot of bonus audio behind there, doing right now the Dominion deep dive, where I'm reviewing every Dominion main event. Episode 4 will be coming out soon. And I'm also doing a thing called the Donovan Digest, where I just kind of talk about some news or stuff that happened in New Japan that happened after we recorded Keeping It Strong Style. So I've been getting a lot of good feedback on some of those bonus audios. So you can go there, patreon.com/KIStrongStyle to find that, and follow the podcast at KIStrongStyle on Twitter/X.
Excellent. Definitely check that out. A great listen, particularly even if you're not, maybe not following New Japan as religiously as you once did. Keeping It Strong Style is a great way to sort of keep up with the goings on and seeing what's hot, and maybe getting a match recommendation or two. So definitely check that out. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. And as I said before, come onto the Social Suplex Discord. There's a link to it in the description for the podcast. If you want to suggest a match that you'd like us to cover here on the AEW Match Guide, you can let me know. We've got a channel for AEW Match Guide, and you can also talk about these matches in there as well. There's lots of other hosts from Social Suplex bumping around there. There's lots of other fans and listeners as well. It's a great place to have a chat. If you feel like social media, particularly if Twitter and X is, too toxic, you get sick of the jerks that are on there, the Social Suplex Discord is a great landing place for you. So definitely check that out. And also make sure you listen to all of the other great shows we've got here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, of course, the aforementioned Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imps WWE Adventure. And I will be back again next week for my third podcast in this season. Sorry, not next week, next fortnight. I'm still getting my, I'm rusty, Jeremy. I'm rusty. I'll be back next fortnight. Me and Imp, we're going to be talking about Orange Cassidy versus John Moxley from All Out 2023. So a good one to jump into there as well. Thank you again, Jeremy, for joining me. And thank you for listening. I will catch you in a fortnight's time. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.